Welcome to the Astor Economic Week in Review. My name is John Eckstein. I'm the Chief Investment Officer of Astor Investment Management. I'm joined today by my friend and colleague, Nick Porter. Nick, hello.
Hi, John.
We are talking to you a few minutes after the Chair Powell's press conference on Wednesday, the 15th of December. And I think that's probably going to be our main topic for the day. Before we jump into the Fed, I'd like to talk about the economy in a nutshell. I still see the economy as quite strong. The labor market, I'm going to say that the labor market's moderating compared to the summer, but still well above average gains. And I think we're going to transition to a slower recovery towards, say, the February 2020 labor market participation rate. What do you think about the economy in a nutshell?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, I think the labor market is certainly ticking along at a good pace, and we're moving closer and closer to what the Fed might think is full employment or near full employment. It is one of these interesting shifts that sort of has occurred among market participants recently is that all of a sudden you're focusing less and less on labor market figures and more on inflation figures.
Yep.
And that's just because demand is quite strong. Consumers seem to be doing well. Corporations seem to be doing quite well. And so now really, I think the downside risk to U.S. growth in the future is what will inflation be like in 2022? And what is the Fed's reaction function going to be like if it does persist?
Well, before we get into inflation, you want to go over what the Fed did today?
So I think the Fed acted broadly in line with what they had telegraphed beforehand and what the market was expecting. The first thing that they communicated was that they're going to double the rate of taper. That means slowing the pace at which they're buying government debt and agency securities.
So they'll stop buying in March as opposed to June.
That's right. And so about 3 months, there'll be no more adding to the balance sheet for now. We'll have to see how that transpires and also the pace at which they'll allow securities to mature and roll off the balance sheet. So that's the first thing they communicated. And the second was the closely watched part of the announcement, and that's the dot plot. What's the median expectation for rate hikes in 2022? And the Fed is now penciling in at the median 3 rate hikes, so 75 basis points in 2022. And again, that's sort of in line with what the market had expected and what you saw on things like Fed funds futures going into the meeting.
Yeah, I think that's right. If we go over the statement and the press conference, there's a few things that jump out. One is that Powell says he doesn't expect a long delay between ending the taper and starting rate hikes. I would say that that means that the March meeting is maybe on the table for hiking rates.
Yeah, very much so.
It's worth noting that even with inflation as high as it is, the participants see risks well weighted to the upside, not the downside. It's interesting because the Fed, and so we're going to get analysis and prognostication a little bit. So, you know, he did say that inflation was not at all the inflation we're talking about in the framework, right? So what does he mean by that? Well, they had a new monetary policy framework that they came up in sort of normal times, and now they're running it in non-normal times or new normal. So what does that mean? Well, I mean, I guess I see the inflation now as something the Fed can't do much about. Right? Like we've all heard 100 times, like the Fed's not going to add any new births to Long Beach, aren't going to rebalance the economy by raising rates. So, I mean, I think the Fed feels like it needs to step in because inflation is very high and they need to be seen to do something. And they'll raise rates at sort of a stately pace over the next year or so, depending on how the economy evolves. But let's say the economy continues to be strong and gets more towards its base rate. The Fed will continue to raise rates, but at a pretty modest pace, 75 basis points next year. If things are still going crazy, 100 basis points the year after. But that doesn't get us even to positive interest rates, real interest rates, right? If we've got inflation at target at 2% and Fed funds at 2%, then we still have zero real rates, even in that soft landing. That sort of everything goes perfectly for the Fed environment.
Yeah, and I think you've made this point before, and I think it's a good one. These questions about the Fed acting and what does raising rates really do to alleviate some of these supply side constraints that we've seen. In my mind, I think it's really more about keeping real rates at least the minimum where they are. So after adjusting for inflation, and I don't really see a compelling argument against that. So I think 75 basis points will probably take you some distance of the way to that. It is interesting that in the September meeting, the Fed's estimate of core PCE in 2022 was 1.9 to 2.8%. And they've revised that pretty strongly upwards, I would say, this meeting to 2.4 to 3.2%. So they are seeing this inflation being less transitory or not transitory. And in fact, that's a word that has been struck out of the statement.
Right. Pulled from the Fed's language. Even if you're staff at the Fed, you're not allowed to say transitory about anything.
It is worth noting, though, that their 2023 estimate of core PCE hasn't really changed very much. They still see it at 2% to 2.5%. So,
yeah, I mean, they've got to be hitting their target in the long, I mean, that's not the long run, but that's a medium run, I guess. So they got to be hitting their target then, at least an expectation. So, I mean, I guess like I still see strong inflation, and what's going to change that is going to be more rebalancing the economy back towards services and away from goods. The services might have their own little burst of inflation because they feel left out. But in general, it's there's supply problems. That's true. But then there's also this spending way more on goods than we did a couple of years ago.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, sort of the expectation for that, that shift was that as COVID started to wind down, people would sort of normalize their historical, towards their historical buying patterns. And that really means, you know, away from buying things on Amazon and going back to eating out and taking holidays and things like that. And, you know, I think part of that story, and probably reasonably, is that COVID has persisted then really longer than people anticipated. And now you have a new variant, new waves in the Northeast of the United States, as well as abroad. And I think that is also part of the story here.
Yeah, as we shift to more an endemic situation with COVID over the next few years, we'll see to what extent we get back to where we were previously. I'm not sure exactly what that will be. At some point, presumably, the virus will be significantly less deadly because of either mutations or because of therapies and vaccines. So it's something that we're going to live with at some point, right? So you notice that New York, which is 90% of adults in New York are vaccinated in New York City. And the death rate in New York City from COVID is about a quarter of what it is in the United States at large, right? So we already, instead of having 1,700 people a day die, we could have one quarter of that, 300 people a day. So you're getting back towards levels that we're going to find socially acceptable. But what that transition is going to look like, nobody really knows. And the Fed realized they don't know either. And I think Powell was also hedging himself in the sense that saying, like, we don't know what's going to happen and we're going to respond to events.
Yeah. I mean, they've always sort of said they're going to remain data dependent. I mean, I think as you go back to the FOMC meeting, my big takeaways were, A, inflation is less transitory than we had hoped. B, we're going to have to move a little bit faster. But C, the silver lining is really that the economy is in a pretty good shape and the labor market has made substantial progress in terms of their mandate. They're feeling comfortable tilting a little bit more towards the inflation side of things and the labor market side of things.
You know, I guess, but the only one thing I want to say is that if you think that inflation target is 2%, inflation is 5%, it's going to stay high again next year. Like a central bank is supposed to have their hair on fire, right? Like in normal circumstances, they're supposed to be in panic mode and they're supposed to be looking for the big lever that says crush the economy, but they're not doing that. And I know, which I think is right. Like I would not vote for crushing the economy. My interpretation again is that the Fed is really doing things that it's expected to do to try and keep inflation expectations under control so that people don't think they don't care, but they don't really expect to bring down inflation with rate hikes or stopping tapering. They still expect it's going to correct them. So that being said, Rob and I did the podcast on the payroll day 10 days ago. One big piece of news we had in the middle was CPI, which was quite strong. So core CPI up 4.9% year on year, headline CPI up 6.8% year on year. You have any thoughts on CPI, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, believe it or not, I mean, 6.8% is the highest since 1982, but believe it or not, that was pretty much in line with expectations.
So it was in line with expectations. It was a very boring number from that.
People weren't totally freaked out. I would say that this number continued the trend of a broadening across categories, not just used cars, but also in like the headline number, you see things like gas and food, and the core number of shelter has to broaden out as well. I sort of have this inkling that as some of these supply chain issues get worked out, and I think there are some nascent signs that they are, that some of the other structural components like housing, like rent, are going to start to pick up a little bit and maybe diminish some of these COVID-related impacts that we've seen and pick up a little bit of the slack and ultimately result in a little bit of a higher number than longer if it were just COVID-related reopening categories?
Yeah, I feel like there'll be some catch up. One thing to notice is that the spread between retail gasoline and wholesale gasoline is at a very high level right now. It's coming in a little bit, but it's still well above normal. Like, so retail gasoline usually costs about 90 cents more than wholesale gasoline, and now it costs about 120 cents more. So if we get back to normal, that's another 30 cents down on gas and bringing gas down to about $3 a gallon, which is still high, right? But it's been as high as about $3.50 a gallon in the US. So that'll help a little bit too, moderate the gas prices.
How much gas do I have to buy at one time to be privy to the wholesale price?
To get the privy to the wholesale price, you just have to take delivery of one barge full of unleaded gasoline in New York Harbor. So
I think I could do that.
I think it's 55,000 tons or pounds, something like that. It's a lot. It's a lot of gasoline. Surely, more than I need. You know, one other thing, as long as we're chatting a little bit about the other things that came out, is I will say that one thing I've been concerned about is sentiment. And the sentiment numbers, consumer sentiment, however you measure it, has been going down for the last, you know, 3-4 months now, in line a large part with the spike in gas prices. But there are some signs maybe that is bottoming. We saw a consumer sentiment number for the University of Michigan that was a little better than expected and a little bit better than the previous month. We saw a small business optimism index, which is stabilizing a little bit. So we do get these sort of throughout the month. And it's too soon to say that there's a trend, but I'm hopeful that we've seen the bottom in the sentiment. That's going to start to turn around.
Yeah. I mean, I think the story there, as you said, has really been inflation and specific inflation components that consumers really care about. So if we see some of this stuff shake out of headline food and energy in particular, that might help as well.
Yeah. So we're going to leave it there. Next week, we will have a special edition of the podcast where Mac O'Brien and I are going to talk about how to hedge inflation. So basically looking at what tools have actually shown useful in fighting and hedging inflation in your portfolio. We'll talk about that next week. Then we'll be off the week before New Year's and back for the unemployment report in January. In the meantime, if you need more economic news, you can check the Aster website, asterim.com. That's like IM for investment management. You can download the Aster Research app, or you can reach out to your Aster sales representative. Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, John.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.